on any given day, they have so many things going on that when they come to a website and that website isn't keeping it simple for them, it's like one more piece of overwhelm in their life. And what I like to say is, where can you as an e-commerce business owner with your website actually be this breath of fresh air that simplifies everything for them, that makes it so seamless and so clear for them to get through? And it's just natural and easy and nothing's stopping them from browsing.
Welcome to the Winning E-Commerce Experience Show, where it's all about creating a brand that your customers love so they keep coming back. This show is brought to you by DataQ. Your store experience begins with your homepage. DataQ improves your conversion rate up to 30% by showing each visitor a personalized homepage based on their interest. And now, your host, Shyam Anver.
Hey guys, our guest today is a conversion design expert. She helps businesses improve their websites for more sales and leads. Reese Feigelman, great to have you with us.
It's really great to be here. Thank you, Shyam. Am I saying your name right?
You are. I mean, I've got one of those names that gets butchered all the time. So I think I'd give you like an A- on that. So that was pretty good.
Oh, that's a pretty good grade, but I got to work on that and try to get to at least an A by the end of the podcast. Will you say it for me?
Just go Shyam.
Shyam.
Yeah.
Better?
Yeah.
Shyam.
All right. So okay. Yeah, you've got your A. Okay. Well done. So you know, we were talking a little bit earlier and you mentioned that you're sort of in a rural part of Michigan right now. So you're kind of like watching all of this crazy news happen around you, and you're sort of in that safe little spot right now, right?
I am. I am fairly sheltered where I am right now because I'm not in a big city. It's been really interesting to watch the trajectory of people over the past couple of weeks. My husband and I don't go out much, but maybe once a week or so, we'll go to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And you can see the progress. Like a few weeks, my husband is Malaysian. And he left Malaysia right at like the heart of this virus starting to head to North America. So he came over to the United States and he was a little freaked out. And he said, look, we need to prepare. And everyone else in America at the time was not even thinking about it. So he and I went out and did what we needed to do to prepare with food and things. No one cared. We started wearing masks at the store and people are looking at us like you're a nut. And now at least 50 to 70% of the people in the grocery store are in some kind of mask.
Right. Like first they call you crazy and then they're like smart.
Yeah, I remember there was this turning point where people were still not in masks and we were, and we went in the store and this older gentleman, he might have been about in his 60s, looks at us and he goes, that's probably a good idea. And it was just, it's just really interesting watching the tenor of people evolve so rapidly.
Yeah, you know, it's like, we've had this conversation quite a bit, you know, with the situation of trying to understand what's going on in the e-commerce world. And I think it just applies, it's not just e-commerce, it's everywhere. It's this new normal that's changing so quickly that you kind of can't settle down and think, right, this is it, because it's not. It's like, yeah, it's it for today, but tomorrow there could be this new news that, you know, it's going to be different.
Yeah, and we have that conversation about that a lot at our dinner table or at night. And what I think a lot about is this uncertainty is making it very challenging for people to know what choices to make, what decisions to make. Because a lot of us are used to having a certain plan and goal, say for the year or the quarter or whatever it might be. And we kind of operate from that. And that doesn't mean that we're rigid. You know, a lot of people can be really flexible, but they have a certain foundation they're working from that they're feeling sure of, and they make their business decisions and other things from there. Well, yeah. Now, you know, everything changes so much from one day to the next that I think it's very challenging even for the greatest leaders among us to make a decision about what should I do for the next quarter? What should I do for the next week?
Yep. Yeah, and I think it's fair to say that a lot of small business entrepreneurs right now are just probably biting their nails and just thinking, okay, What do we do? We're kind of like already, it's not the beginning of the pandemic, obviously. So I think quite a few folks have already had time to think about it and make some plans. I think, you know, cash flow wise, they've made some decisions and now they're just waiting. So I guess like one of the biggest changes which I've seen is like on the remote work side, right? So we were just talking about it, you and I, that we're fortunate to be in industries that you can get a lot done on a computer. And, you know, you mentioned that you've been in Malaysia and now you're here, you've been in Canada. Tell us a little bit about what you do. So conversion design expert sounds very interesting. Normally I hear conversion rate optimization, but conversion design sounds like a very interesting mix of words. So take it away.
Okay. Well, I've been a designer for like a decade and a half, 15 years or so. And I also come from a journalism background. That's where I got my education in, but I decided not to go that path. But what I do is I marry those two disciplines. So that really looks like copywriting and storytelling. And then I marry them with design. And for a lot of my career, my focus was on making things look attractive and memorable and engaging with people's emotions. Sure. But especially in the past few years, as e-commerce has really risen and taken on a prevalence, like in the last 5 or so years, I started shifting my focus to looking a lot more about design strategy, right? Like, what is your website doing for your potential customer? Where are you losing them, right? Like, where might it be leaking you money? Or where might the design be, you might be missing opportunities to, for example, get someone to click through on something that you want to click through and they aren't, because it's not really clear or intuitive for them to do that. So what I do now is I help people like look at their site through the eyes and like in the shoes of a potential customer, because we get so focused on our own thing, right? Like we spend hours building this website, and it's really hard then for us to step outside of ourselves and say, actually, how is a potential new customer or even an existing customer experiencing this? Like, what is their life like? Is my site annoying them? Is it making their life easier? Is it helping them along their journey? Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes down to things like your design, your usability, even the words you choose to use on your buttons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that it's not just e-commerce. I mean, we run a software platform, and I can tell you it's very similar issues, right? Like we have to connect with the customer. Whoever's coming on the site, they need to very quickly understand what it is you're offering, why it's a benefit to them. And I mean, the more and more you're in your industry or the work that you do, whether it's a product, I think you do get into this state where you assume that everybody else knows what you're talking about. And that can be very dangerous because they don't. Anyone who's in some kind of vertical, they know the industry so well that maybe jargon that's very basic to them is not.
That's exactly it. And I was thinking earlier today about something I really like and try to do in my own work as much as possible is avoid jargon, so that if you and I are having a conversation, your mom could listen in and hopefully get it. And there isn't a word thrown out with like, at X point in the funnel when the user does Z, and it's like, I have no clue what that means. And you're right. It's very hard when we know something well, like when we know our own industry well, our own business well, to one of my mentors says, remember the virgins. That means like, remember the people who, they are not nearly as familiar with our stuff as we are. We need to hold their hands to help get them there.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the mom test?
No, tell me about it.
It's basically exactly what you just said. So it's interesting that you brought it up. Like it's a thing in the startup world, at least, where they say, if you're going to talk about a value proposition, you have to apply the mom test. And, you know, especially with these high-tech startups, which, you know, we're guilty of as well, you have this huge penchant where everyone wants to put in blockchain, AI, machine learning, this, that, all this stuff, where it seems like everyone's trying to one-up each other and confusing the person who's reading it, when they could just as well do something like in simple words, which anyone can understand, right?
Yeah, the way I like to think about it is just like, have a conversation like you and I are having here. When it comes to things like, for example, the copy you put on your website, when you're talking about your products, talk like you're talking to another human being, or like you say, the mom test. If you had to try to explain to your mom your product, right? What would you tell her? Like, you know, she pretend she knows absolutely nothing about it. How could you explain it to her in a way that makes sense to her? And then use that to help guide you when you're making decisions about like your headlines or what your product specs are, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, and I think this is a really good point for everyone, you know, with an e-commerce site listening in to sort of apply that test already, right, to the kind of copywriting they're using. I think especially now with things changing so quickly, I guess there's no better time than now where you can make things even simpler for your audience to come in and understand what you do and support you. Because right now, I think everyone wants more sales, especially if you're in a vertical that's been affected. What I've been seeing quite a bit is that demand for the bigger companies like Amazon and, you know, Walmart has really skyrocketed. They're hiring a lot more people and things like that. So I guess this is one very effective way for small businesses to sort of like reclaim that share by being more human, connect more with their audience, right?
Exactly. And I'm really glad you brought up Amazon and Walmart, because I like to call them the elephant in the room that we need to really be talking about. Mm-hmm. Here's the reality. When we think about what happens when you or I go to Amazon.com, we kind of know what to do, don't we? If this may not apply to everyone, but let's pretend that most of the people listening have at least done a fair amount of purchases on Amazon. They know the process. They get there, they look for their thing, right? And they find it, they know what the orange colored button means, the add to cart, or you know, buy instantly, whatever that's called. And then the checkouts are really seamless. And the reason I bring up all those little touch points is because that's what a small business is up against. And I don't say that to be discouraging, but I say it as kind of a benchmark for us to think about, that we are always in an e-commerce business. We're competing against these guys, right? Mm-hmm. Amazon and Walmart. And a lot of times we might, like a business may have an amazing product that Amazon or Walmart can't compete with. They have something that differentiates them. And so that's good. But they need to think about, well, what is the experience of buying like over on a place like Amazon or Walmart? It's so easy for people. Like it's a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. And if we want people to buy from us, you know, if an e-commerce store wants someone, a small owner wants to buy from them, they need to do their best to try and make their own website and user experience as easy and as seamless as those bigger shops do.
Right. And I mean, let's break that down a little bit now, because that's a great point you brought up, right? Essentially, you're pointing to these guys as sort of like a gold standard. Obviously, there are things that small businesses can do differently because they're small, right? Like for instance, Amazon has a huge problem because they've got probably millions of products, whereas maybe you've only got 500. So you can be maybe a little bit more focused than their site can be, which so they can never beat you on. But there's clearly things which you've just pointed out on how Amazon does things very well that small businesses can emulate. So what are those areas that you think small businesses are not doing enough about?
Really good question. One of the areas that I see the biggest problem in is probably the most important part of a website, and that's your header. So what I mean by the header is the top part of your website where you're going to have your logo, your navigation. Sometimes you might have a search box, especially if your product catalog is bigger. And a lot of times I'll come across a small business website and the header design isn't as intentional or thoughtful as it could be. And I'm going to give you a couple examples of things that I see on headers that are a problem. Yeah. So that if someone is listening and they have this going on their website, they could consider, well, maybe I need to revisit that and think about taking that off. So here's The first one is, let's say you decide you're going to put your About Us page as a link in the navigation. And if you think about it, the real estate is really, it's really contained up there. It's, there's not a lot of space to work with. And if you're wasting a link on About Us, about your company, that's a link that could be instead encouraging people to go look at a particular product category. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying get away with, like, do away with it completely. Maybe that has a home down in your footer. Or maybe, you know, for the really small businesses that we're thinking about here who may only have 3 or 5 products in their catalog, and they, their whole positioning is about them as a homegrown company. Mm-hmm. Now, in that case, I could see that context. Well, maybe it makes more sense to have that About Us link in there. But for a lot of people with a bigger product catalog, something like a link like that, About Us, makes no sense. It's a wasted opportunity, right? You're sending people to something that isn't encouraging them to buy.
Right. Are you alluding to the paradox of choice, where you give people too many choices and they don't make any at all?
Well, I guess I am in a roundabout way. I like to steer people where we want them to go. And I'm glad you talked about choice, because that brings me to something that isn't in the header, but is that I see as a problem on homepages a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's this. So I'm in a couple of Facebook groups that are for Shopify. And I see over and over people say, please review my site. And I go look at the site. I don't review it. I just go look at it because I'm curious. Mm-hmm. And inevitably what's happened is I think they've probably decided to dip their toe in e-commerce. They've bought a bunch of products off AliExpress. And here's what's on the homepage. You've got like glue, nails, shoes, clothing. And it's like the whole hardware store there. None of the pictures look consistent, for one. Okay. But also you're throwing everything but the kitchen sink at people to try and sort through.
Yeah.
My husband and I were just looking at a site today, like this for his, he's a miniature war gamer. Mm-hmm. So he's in this hobby and he was showing me this site where he's like, look at this homepage. There's 25 different hobby types here on the homepage alone, and they have no grouping. Like mm-hmm. they aren't, say, grouped into categories like for the World War II lover or, you know, for the Afghanistan, you know.
Right.
So when we do that, when you have a homepage where you're kind of throwing everything at people, hoping that something sticks and it has no order or organization or grouping to it, people's brains, they're going to get overwhelmed. They're going to shut down. They're going to nope right out of your site and go somewhere else. Because mm-hmm. it's like what you said. First of all, there's too much choice. All right. But the problem isn't that there's too much choice. It's that we're asking them to try and in their brains, like, sort all these choices out and group them into categories that make sense. Right. And that's really fatiguing for people's brains.
Right, right. So it sounds like sort of the overarching theme of what you're saying is that people aren't keeping it simple enough.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I understand. There was a point in my business, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, where I really struggled to simplify my mm-hmm. messaging and what I did for people. And I had all this high-level knowledge. And anyone listening to this, whatever your industry is, you have high-level knowledge of your industry. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's what people want. You know, mm-hmm. they want all this really sophisticated stuff. And it took a long time for me to wrap my head around the fact that, no, they don't. They're coming into your business with oftentimes a fairly low level of knowledge. And so we need to keep it simple for them. We need to consider the fact that they may have had a crazy day right now during this time. They're juggling kids. They're working from home. You know, they don't know what's going on for dinner. On any given day, they have so many things going on that when they come to a website and that website isn't keeping it simple for them, it's like one more piece of overwhelm in their life. And what I like to say is, where can you, as an e-commerce business owner with your website, actually be this breath of fresh air that simplifies everything for them, that makes it so seamless and so clear for them to get through? And it's just natural and easy, and nothing's stopping them from browsing.
So what's a good, I mean, I think that's a really good point you made, right? So we've got that advice now, and I'm just trying to think in the shoes of someone listening in thinking, well, that sounds a little bit like my site. So, you know, what should they do? What's an easy, because it sounds like to make it simple, you kind of need to think a little bit outside your shoes, because for you, everything looks simple because you know it so well. So does it make sense that they get someone to review it who isn't so familiar with their site, and then they sit with them? You know, what are techniques that you can recommend someone listening in to try to find out which areas they need to improve?
Well, you just mentioned a great idea, and that is have someone that you have a trusted relationship with. And this is important because you want to have it be someone who isn't afraid to be, you know, just honest and straightforward with you and isn't trying to please you, right? If you have a relationship.
And probably not your mom, because she's always going to say you're great.
Exactly. Your mom is going to think it's amazing because you made it. So you need this trusted person who you know will tell it to you straight. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what you might do is, it's one thing, this is a little challenging right now with this virus in the world, because what I would normally advise is, if you can do it, you want to sit down with them and you want to watch them try to get through your website. Mm-hmm. And you want to just kind of, you know, you want to be like an observer and see where they get stuck. And after a little while, you might say to them, why did you do that? Why did you go there? And putting yourself in a position where you're doing a lot of observing, asking questions, and listening for the things that come up, they're going to give you indicators about where things might be confusing on your site. Or not just confusing, let's say you know your whole site process from A to Z. You know how to get from here to there, but you talk with them and you realize, hey, they are looking at this completely different than I am. They don't want to go from A to Z. They want to go from A to K or A to Q and then back to K.
Yeah.
And so just that alone, observing someone and asking questions, can give you a rich amount of information about how your website's being taken in by like an objective party.
That's really interesting. Like, you know, while you were saying that, I was just thinking, you know, if you're selling stuff, there's really not, you could just probably do like a gift card, and you can tell your friend who you trust, hey, like, I'll give you $50 or $20 that you can spend on my store. In exchange, I want to do a Skype and record you making the purchase. And then I want to ask you, you know, why you did that. And then, you know, it's like, you're not actually giving away $20 because it's buying from your store. And you get all the great stuff that you just mentioned, right? I think that's a great point, getting someone to sit behind them.
Yeah, and like you said, I love your idea, because sometimes when we have someone literally over our shoulders, we behave differently. We feel watched, and when we feel watched, we will change our behavior, and it's not conscious, it's just how we are as human beings. So what I like about your idea, and so it's an expansion of my idea and then yours, is why don't we ask them to just record their screen? And there's this, if people are listening and looking for something really simple and they don't want to install Skype, for example, there is a software you can put on Chrome browser called Loom, Loom dot, I think it's loom.com. It's free. And what you can do is you can video record your browser as you're browsing. And you can also talk as you do it if you want. I use it all the time to try and demonstrate to people, oh, you know, here's a problem there, or you need to fix this.
Right.
But for what we're talking about here, yeah, just give someone a gift card, you know, $50 or whatever it is. Ask them, give them an assignment. You might say to them, I want you to buy something you want, but before you do that, will you walk around my store a bit? And will you tell me any areas where you're like, huh, I don't quite get what you mean there, or I want to go here, but I don't understand how to get there.
Right.
And maybe if they're willing to kind of narrate through the video in the places where they're confused, or if they aren't comfortable doing that, just giving you a write-up afterward of, hey, this is kind of where I got stuck, or I didn't quite get this, or in the checkout process, it wasn't clear to me if you're going to charge for shipping or not. I mean, this is like, it's a rich field of information that you can get just by asking someone to record their screen and go buy a product in exchange for some, you know, a gift card. It's a great idea. I love it.
I love it too. I think it's, you know, we're always talking about getting to know your customers, and I really love that you brought this up, because what better way than to actually see them use your site and challenge the assumptions that you made, right? Okay, so we talked about, it sounds like the homepage really is the focus here, right? So it's the one page that's visited by pretty much everyone who's coming to your site. I think there's, you know, there's a lot you can do with your product page and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, just going back to that Amazon example as a guideline, we've talked about the header, we've talked about sort of the content and simplifying that. You know, I've heard a lot of stuff about website speed, because as we all know, Amazon spends a ton of money. I think Google does as well, to make sure that it loads very quickly. You know, like, do you see this as an area as well, which small businesses should focus on and try to improve?
100%. And before I go there, I will say, like, on a personal note, a few years ago, when website speed started becoming a bigger topic, at least in my realm, I was annoyed. I'm like, you know what? I just want to make stuff look good. And now you're telling me the other thing I need to add to my list and making sure that it doesn't overly impact the site load speed. But over time, I've learned so much about this, and I've observed my own browsing behavior habits. And here's what people need to know. So in 2016, which honestly, in this day and age is like centuries ago, right? But Google did a bunch of research that showed that when someone's on their phone and they go to your website, 53% of people who go there, and it, like, if your site takes longer than 3 seconds to load, they will leave. Three seconds. And there are people, you know, I've helped on websites where I've come in and the load time is 9 seconds or 16 seconds. And someone hears that, and in our brains, it doesn't sound like much. And it is forever when you're trying to wait for a website to load.
Especially on your phone.
Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier. And I think part of why it's such a big deal on our phone is because we hold this device really closely to our faces. Like, we're engaged in it on a really physical level. Mm-hmm. More than we are on our desktop. And right. Also, for whatever reason, I've noticed I personally am more impatient on my phone than I am on the desktop. I don't know what that's about, but I am. So the website speed, huge deal. And there's a big tip that I want to give people when thinking about their website speed that can help. And it's going to help them on their homepage. It's going to help with website speed. Okay. Right. And it's also going to help with usability and relevance for people. And it's this, you know, you go to a lot of sites, whether it's e-commerce or otherwise, but especially e-commerce, and at the top of the homepage, there is a carousel. Do you know what I mean by that? Where, like, sure, they're rotating 5 different images. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, those things are some of the biggest bloat makers that are out there when it comes to website speed.
High five.
Yeah, virtual high five.
We're on a mission to kill those as well. So,
thank you. And I want to speak to it for two things. First of all, they're killing your speed, and there's a couple reasons why. One is the script that loads these in and of itself tends to be clunky and bloated, and that's just adding to your overall site weight. Two, a lot of times the images aren't optimized. They're these huge, like, wide-width images, all adding up to be, like, I saw one the other day that was 5 megabytes worth of images in a carousel. It doesn't sound like much. It's crazy amount of.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing. Let's think about it from the point of view of the people who come to visit our site. A lot of them will not stop and read those carousels. Like, they just, their attention is not going to stay long enough to see what it rotates through. And in a way, I think it indicates to people that we do not have a lot of confidence in our focus and our message and our positioning. Mm-hmm. And I think the carousels end up being these kind of compromises that come out of the marketing department, because everyone wants to have their message be at the top of the homepage. And so the carousel becomes this, okay, I'll make everyone happy. Right. But you cannot be everything to everyone.
I think with the carousels, there's quite a few people who are guilty of doing it, I think, just because everyone else is doing it. I think there's a lot of, like, me too-ism going out there. When maybe it's like you need to be a little bit more deliberate about the choices you make on your own website. Just because someone else is doing it doesn't mean you have to.
I'm so glad you said that, because that's one of my pet peeve type rants is that, look, just because someone else is doing something on their website does not mean A, it was a good decision, or B, at least it's not a good decision for your unique market, your unique audience. You know, sure. Don't just copycat other people's websites and the features they have on it. It's not a great idea.
So how would you like do sort of a quick review? I think, you know, I think you brought up this point about how you had this client who had a 16 second load speed or something like that, right? Or load time rather. What were the steps you took to look at that and bring that down? Because obviously that's just not sustainable. And even if you brought that 16 seconds to 10, I'd assume you would just that conversion rate would be so much better, you know, with that. So someone listening in thinking, you know what, I think my site's really full of stuff as well. What do I do? Maybe let's talk through your process. How do you approach that kind of client and what do you do?
Okay. Good question. First of all, there's a couple of different diagnostic tools that I will use to help me figure out what's going on with a website. You know, what's the speed coming in at? And then after we know what that is, where are the problems? Like, what's making this speed be the way it is? And I want to say, first of all, that these tools can sometimes be challenging to interpret. I mean, I still struggle with it. So I don't want to overwhelm someone who's not really overly familiar with how to use this and diagnose. Mm-hmm. But there is the one I like for people to give to people who don't do what I do, and mm-hmm. for just to help them at least start to see and diagnose, is it's at pingdom.com.
Right.
And if you go there, you need to go down to their footer and they have a little link called tools. Or you could Google this. Google like Pingdom page speed test. Mm-hmm. So when you find it, what you do is you put your website URL in the top of the tool, and it'll take maybe a minute or so, and it feeds it through its thing, and then it lets you know, it gives you a grade. But don't get fixated on the grade. What you really want to do is first of all see like what's my load time coming in at, mm-hmm. and then the great thing about this tool, like this happened the other day. This person's website was loading for about nine seconds in this instance. And I looked right. And I thought, well, I had a hypothesis about what the problem was. She had a video on her homepage, and the tool showed me this video was 7 megabytes. Okay. So what the tool will show you a little graph, and it's really great. You don't need to like know a lot to figure out the graph. The graph will show you, here's how much of the percentage of your site weight is like images. Here's how much is video. Here's how much is scripts. So if you go there and you see, for example, that you have a video somewhere that's 7 megabytes, well, you know, that alone, that's such a low hanging fruit. Let's get rid of that video. Or there's rarely a time in this instance where I could see justifying having that video on the page. I think you have to ask the question, is the cost worth it? You know, is right. the cost to our site speed worth it having this video here?
Right. And I guess you could just do that and just look at your conversions over the next 2 weeks and see if it made an impact or not, or maybe more if you don't have that much traffic. But it's very easy to test, right? Just to see that if things improved or not.
You could, yeah. And so what it's kind of tough, especially if you don't have a lot of traffic, because if you make an incremental change, it can take a long time to see whether that's sure. netting a positive effect. So in those cases, especially if you don't have much traffic, I actually am an advocate of making more changes, bigger changes, because the cost to your potential traffic or your potential customers is a lot lower. You aren't in a position where you're going to lose a lot of people already, right? Yes.
Yeah, so you can be more risk savvy, right? Like you can afford to take more risk compared to say a Google who are never going to make a huge change on their homepage because they've just got so many people coming, so many people used to it. But let's get on to, I think we've talked about some of like the more fundamental stuff, and you know, it's been a really good conversation so far. I'd really love to get into the other part that you talked about, which is sort of that copywriting and design and things like that, because I think that's where things get very interesting. because now you've sort of got your fundamentals in place. You've got a website that hopefully is not overcrowding the user or cluttering them with too many options. It's very simply laid out. And I think just being simple would probably help you with the website speed as well, because you're not putting too much stuff in there. So you've got this site. And now I think what you were mentioning is what kind of terms that we can use, and what kind of copywriting that we can use, and what kind of designs can we use to be more buyer-centric, right? To encourage people to come in and buy. Let's talk a little bit about that. Like I am aware that this topic is so subjective, because it really depends on the brand, and but I don't know how much sort of that general guidelines that we can talk about where someone listening in can are there any takeaways that they can have to try to improve sort of their copy or their design to make it more conversion friendly?
Sure. So let's go over a couple copy tips first, and then I can talk about a couple of design tips. Copy wise, first of all, something to get away from is jargon. And this is where we can apply the mom test that we talked about before. So if you have like the headlines on your site, these are, you know, that very first sentence that's in bigger text, like on your homepage or on your products page, or even your product descriptions. How much can your random average person understand what you're trying to say? Are you trying to talk above them? And I think one of the biggest issues I see with copywriting is that people tend to get too formal, right? They write like they are writing their PhD for their professor for graduate school when they're describing their product. And this is not how people relate to each other. It's not how they relate to even objects that they buy. It's not how we talk with each other. So the more you can think about, how do people really talk? How do they talk about my product? How do they use my product? And do they use jargon when they're talking about it? There is a place for jargon, but a lot of times it's not the technical jargon that you that someone may be thinking about when they're familiar with their own product. Instead, people might be giving something a nickname, right? They might be casually speaking about the clothes in their closet, right? And so when it comes to your copy, whenever you can try to sound more human and more conversational, I think you're going to catch people in a good way. It's going to feel like a positive experience. You're humanizing your brand, right? So you're creating that association where your brand feels more approachable and human. And this differs from brand to brand. Like you said, it's subjective. You know, the tone and approach for someone who is selling electronic parts and motherboards, I don't know, something like, is very different than someone who is selling clothing and accessory to millennial women. But both of those markets have people within those markets that talk a certain way, that relate to your product a certain way. So meet them where they are. Talk with them like they talk. And we talked earlier in this about having someone go through your website with a gift card, right? Well, what about another thing that I love to do that has helped my business so much, and it helps when I'm helping clients, is this. Can you find me some customers who might be willing to sit down and talk on the phone with me for, I don't know, 15 minutes? And maybe in exchange for that, you give them a gift card, whatever it is. I mean, and then you want to ask them very open-ended questions. And the idea is that you, and you want to record this call too, because you're going to forget it later, and you want to listen to it, and you want to listen to how do they talk about your product? How do they talk about their lives and how they use your product or service, right? And from there, give their words back to them in your copy. Find a way to say something that they told you and put that right in one of your headlines.
Yes, I love that so much. I mean, especially I think the longer you are in business, I think you should be getting much better at getting in the shoes of your customers. Like I was talking to this entrepreneur a couple of days ago who runs this lingerie store in the Middle East. And she started, she was just talking about how she started with her assumptions based on like more North American women. But then the more she started selling and the more she realized that actually her customer base have very different ideas on how they purchased than her assumptions because she was in the US. And so she just kept getting more and more relevant on that side.
I love that story so much because you bring up a common problem, and it's these assumptions. And a lot of times we are conditioned by, for example, Hollywood, or what we might see coming at us in our own culture and in our own lens. But right. That may not be the lens of our customers. And B, like your example is so, it's so good because the way that a Western woman or an American woman might relate to her lingerie, might talk about her lingerie, is a very different experience than someone in the Middle East is going to. I mean, not very different. I'm making an assumption by saying that, but I am assuming
sure.
because their background, their life, their daily needs, their relationships with their husbands, they're going to be culturally different than they are for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so this person that you're talking about needs to figure out, well, what is that woman's relationship with my product and how is it being used in her life? I can't assume the way an American woman is using it and talking about it is going to work for my market. It's not. You got to really think about what is your unique market story? What's their background? And by cultural background, it doesn't even need to be as big as one country or another. It could be someone from a rural state in America versus someone in a city, right?
Right. So that's, I think, the second golden nugget, if you will. I think everyone listening in, stop what you're doing, hit pause, go send an email to your best 5 customers, give them a gift certificate, and tell them to please get on the phone with you so that you can talk to them and find out why they bought from you and why they liked you, and that hopefully you can reuse what they said back on your copy, right?
Yes, and I would also encourage you to add to that conversation a question about, you want to think about what either pain or frustration they have mm-hmm. before they got your product. So I'll use the lingerie because it's a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that you are targeting women who up until now have been very frustrated finding a bra that fits them right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you want to ask them about that. What has it been like for you for the past 10 years? You know, what happens? And you want to try and get like as much as possible, make them comfortable mm-hmm. so that they're going to share with you what a pain in the butt it was. And, you know, maybe it hurt their back over time, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe the bras were digging into them. I don't know. And when you can start to get those golden nuggets, not only will it help inform your copy, but it's going to help inform your positioning. And when you talk in your product descriptions like this, this is how a human being talks. Are you tired of a bra that digs into your sides and makes your back feel like you've been running all day by the end of the day? We're tired of that too. And that's why we built the XYZ bra.
Right.
You know, can you hear right. how what I'm saying, if you were to write your copy like that, that speaks directly to the heart of someone's frustrations and why they're coming to you and why they're hoping that you offer something better for them.
Yeah. And I think one of the pushbacks that I've heard from owners is that I think again, it's a big assumption that I'm making here by saying many, but people approach e-commerce with a product, right? They're generally like they're makers or they're people who just want to buy and sell. So they're generally very good with the product. But if you're talking about things like copywriting, these are, I'd say, very specific skills. So it sounds like what we're talking about, just getting your customers' own words, that's a really good one just to sort of jumpstart things. Even if you don't consider yourself a good writer, you can reuse what people are saying. But once you're making sales, this sounds like something which if you're not very, if you don't feel like you're very good at, it's something which is probably pretty good to go on some like any kind of agency or consultancy and try to get some professional help because this can materially improve your conversion rate.
It can. And even though I come from a design background, in the past year, I have started to really become a big believer that copy may be more important than design. And it's right. tough for me to say that as a designer, but I have seen websites where the design is kind of ho-hum. It's not terrible, but it's not amazing. But the copy is so good. Yeah. The copy is so good that it's enough. And I don't want to say that and for people to think, oh, well, if I get my copy down, that's it. I can ignore the rest. No, I mean, look, those sites that I'm talking about, if they also spend a little time on their design, man, they would be killing it. But copy is so important. And yeah, if you, I gave you some ideas on how to start, especially if you're DIYing it right now. But if you reach a certain point in your business and in your growth where, you know, you have the budget to do so, bring in someone who understands how to write and position and get the voice of your market and talk to them in a way that's going to make them say, I need that thing now.
Right. So this has been like, I think, very good. I think a bit of a toolkit, really, on how it's almost like a diagnostic, if you will, right? Of like what of things that you can look at on your website right now. One of the things which I've been very curious about is that, you know, just before we started recording, we were talking about how the world is changing so quickly with this whole situation. One of the big trends I'm seeing is that the number of e-commerce sites that are coming online, I don't think it's ever been higher. Shopify has done a 90-day trial. I don't have any data, but I'm at least from the app installs that we are getting, it's pretty clear that like there's a lot more new stores than there have ever been. What can we say to those folks? Because now they didn't have a website. They're just literally getting something done now. So in this case, you don't actually have any customers to talk to. And I mean, it's clear that they can apply some of these things already by building something and checking how fast it is. But would you change anything about what you're saying in terms of advice for these folks? And, you know, what should they look at when they're building their very first website?
Okay. I think one of the things they can focus on right now is putting a really solid foundation in place on their website. And what that translates into, here's a couple things. We talked a little bit about the homepage, and I gave you an example of so many sites I see where the homepage just, here in the United States, we have this thing called the dollar store. I don't know if you have it there. Mm-hmm. You walk in and it's, everything's a dollar and it's overwhelming, and it's great that it's on sale, but I see a lot of homepages that are kind of like that dollar store. And so what someone who has a new site could do is think about this. If I have a bunch of products, how does it make sense to group them together? How could I, if these things are in the home category, how could I group them together in a way that makes sense in the home category? Or, you know, don't slap the clothing up to next to the glue. Mm-hmm. So one of the things you could think about from the beginning is how you're going to organize your stock and displaying that stock on a website. Mm-hmm. And some of these newer shops might have a smaller product catalog. They might be trying to sell t-shirts, for example. Mm-hmm. But even then, don't throw every t-shirt, like let's say you've made 20 t-shirts. Don't throw every one of those up on the homepage. Instead, maybe what you would do is group things into, you know, our latest trends. And you show like 3 or 5 of the newer t-shirts that you have in stock. So think first about how you're going to structure and organize your website, and think about it like almost imagine you're writing a book and you have chapters, right? Like what's going to go in chapter 1? Well, how do I organize things for chapter 2? And so really think about that, because it's going to make it easier for people and easier for you later, because it's already organized from the beginning. And as your store grows, if you're working off an organized foundation, it's so much saner for you to keep track of things later. Right? Sure. So you're helping yourself out in this process too. So that's one. It's just, how do you organize your stuff? Mm-hmm. How do you make it visually grouped together in a way that makes sense? Like with like, apples with apples, oranges with oranges.
The idea that's forming in my head as you're saying that is sort of like curation, curation, curation. Like you need to be very, very picky, or even nitpicky rather, about what goes on your homepage, because that's sort of like the best version of you.
Yeah.
And then you can put the details, you know, in your product pages and whatever, where it can be. But like, that's sort of the idea I'm getting from what you're saying. I think that's a really good advice.
And I have one more tip, and it's a small one. So I want to give this one because it's so easy and grabbable for someone who, especially just starting out. One of the biggest issues I see on a website is this. you go and they might have this beautiful color scheme. It looks like something that belongs on like an Instagram influencer's feed. It's got like these lovely pastels and things, right? And you can't find the buy button. You can't find the add to cart to button because it's also like, it's sitting in the color palette. It's kind of like, our eye skips right over it because it looks too similar. Mm-hmm. This is a big one. I know you want to look aesthetically beautiful, but you need to take that add to cart button, that buy button, and make it a color that you aren't seeing anywhere else on your website or very sparingly, and make that thing stand out and bright and bold and make sure that the text on it is readable. So here's what that means, like an exact example. Don't have a light yellow button color with white text on it. That's just so hard to read. Right. If you really want to be smart, I advocate rip off Amazon. Use their orange color. As long as it's not going to clash and look horrible with your design, why not borrow from them? People are already used to associating the color orange in their minds with buy or checkout. So, hey, let's leverage that and use it on our own sites.
That makes a lot of sense. So I think we're at the risk of, I would love to keep going, but I think at this stage, we've talked about so much. I don't want to overwhelm anybody listening in. Maybe we already have.
I think we have too.
So why don't we just do a quick wrap up? Like what are sort of your top three takeaways for people listening in who are thinking, you know what, I think there's a lot of good stuff here. I want to make my website better. What are the top three things that they should be doing right now after this podcast?
All right. So first, put yourself in other people's shoes. And that's very hard for us to do sometimes as human beings. So one of the ways you could do that is I want you to observe your own browsing behaviors as you're like, you're watching TV at night and you're on your phone and maybe you're shopping. What annoys you? Mm-hmm. Start making a list of all the things that annoy you. It could be a website that doesn't load fast enough or a chat thing that comes up at just the wrong time. Start making a list of those. And if those are on your site, get them off your site, because if they're annoying you, they're going to be annoying your customers. Mm-hmm. And I think the other takeaway is ask people. Like, start talking with people. Ask them to either go through your website or hop on the phone with them and do a customer interview and understand why they bought from you, what they were looking for, and what their pains and frustrations are that are related to your product or service. I think those are really the two biggest things that if people did that, they would have so much to work from for the next 6 months. It could help inform their copy. It could help inform their website changes. They'll get to know their customers better. They might find themselves writing better emails like to their customers because they find that they can write to the customer's needs and in their voice more. Those weren't three, but I've got two for you.
No, those are two very good ones. I love it. Reese, thank you so much. It's been really a pleasure having you on. I think just with the volume of stuff we talked about, and especially things that I think you had some really good advice, I am sure people would love to get in touch with you. And I know that, and I understand that you've got a sort of a special offer for all the listeners out there. You know, why don't you talk us through it?
Yeah, I would love to help people more, especially right now when there's a lot of overwhelm and confusion and what do I do next. So I made a free guide for people. You're going to love this title. It's 3 secrets to turning your e-commerce website into a magical selling machine. Okay, I know it's a little fun. You can get that on my website. It's at designbyreese.com/ecom. So ECOMM. And when you do that, you're going to get emails from me too. And that's how we can stay in touch. And one thing I always tell people is I read and respond to every email I receive. So if you get an email from me and you reply to me, I'll reply back. You have a question for me, I'll answer it. I'm very open that way.
Awesome. Reese, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're still here, which means you definitely enjoyed that conversation. This is a special COVID-19 e-commerce miniseries to help small business merchants out there get prepared. We're doing a lot more of these, so be the first to know whenever there's a new episode. Just follow DataCue, that's DataCue, on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. Stay safe out there, everybody. Till next time, this is Sharam.